Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. As always, we're here until the hour of six. Today's discussion is going to sound like a continuation of the discussion we had yesterday on heritage and the preservation and protection, among other things, you know, for the future generation. Today's, yesterday's discussion was more on the, continental and global level. Today is, and it was also just a very, wide in a sense that, it was more of an international level discussion. Albeit it took place in Nairobi in Kenya. Pardon me. Today's discussion is going to, we are going to, it's actually based on, it's more localized in a way that it's it emphasizes Namibia, especially on the side of mostly the languages that are spoken. I think there are a few things that we have to clarify. Not clarify, start with.
No,
we're not clarifying anything. We are starting. This is going to be a little bit of like me cooking my own people, aka Namibians.
It's not actually them, Helmut.
Not them?
Yeah. It is predominantly us because we brought in at 1990 English.
Yeah.
As the national medium.
Yeah.
And what has English obviously done, just for our listeners to note, guys, this is, like Helmut said, it's a follow on from yesterday, but it is technically an expansion in a Namibian context, which also feeds back into a global thing.
Yeah.
Yesterday we did a continental thing based upon the cultural value that Africa is not contributing to the world.
Yeah.
But today's discussion sees us, we go micro, in a Namibian context, and then we expand back into a global context because this is something that UNESCO is busy championing. However, I am afraid from where Helmut wants to start. Helmut, I'll have to allow you to clarify the starting point.
Yeah, the starting point.
As long as it's not about Swak of Moon.
Oh no, it's not that. Yeah. Like I told you before we got in here. That's not how I forfeit my salary.
We don't score those own goals.
No, we're not going to do that. Yeah. So language first. That's the first thing we have to, that's the first thing that we first have to look at.
Yeah.
What is considered a language? Because, very often, especially, and now this one, it's a good thing this is more of a Namibianized topic.
Yeah.
We just decided to put more like a focus on on what's taking place in Namibia in terms of languages. More often, I have been asked one question that still baffles me to this day. Yeah. What language do you speak? And when I tell them I speak Thimbukushu, they all go like, what is that?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and this is not and this is even I remember this other day. Some of we had all our colleagues here, and my mom called. I pick up and I can't speak English to my mom. First of all, she's gonna boomerang a sandal all the way from Kavango to this studio, so I don't want that. So we just had a brief conversation, and then she hangs up. Everyone is looking at me, going, "What language is that?" So I think a lot of us don't know is the difference between a language and a dialect. And that includes yours truly here. What's the difference between a language and a dialect? What language do you speak? And by the way, for the 100th time, and I sing this to all my non-Kavango friends, Kavango is not a language, it's a region.
Yeah, I heard that yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the audios we have today, because we can't use the other two audios, there's a Dwight coughing in between and some people shuffling in between. So I was actually a little bit, let me first recognize Helmut. The discussion of the aspect of of languages is a unique thing, because many people think a language doesn't contain an identity.
But someone's language is language is literally someone's idea. Every language has its own rules, and every language has its own distinctive rules on how to pronounce certain words, on how to on where to raise and lower your voice. Everything from how to pronounce certain letters. For example, one very crazy colleague of mine we decided to, we were just out shopping for lunch, and we saw this type of, the type of chocolate that they're making this day for some reason, that, they are not chocolate. They're basically shots, because they have, alcohol cocooned on the inside. I know. Now, because...
Wait, is it the chocolate that comes in a tray?
Yeah.
With a brandy in it?
Uh-huh.
Okay, there's nothing wrong with
that. Yours truly here did not know that there are two types. There's one where, there's one where the brandy, for example, is mixed, is blended together with the chocolate itself. There's one where, like, a chocolate is basically used as a cover to, because the alcohol is literally in liquid form inside. Chocolate seems to contain what I read as Mojito. Exactly. You see my point? It turns out, according to the Spanish, J is H.
Yeah. Or a Y. Double L is a Y.
To this day, she's still laughing. But the point is... I was applying the rules of the English language to a Spanish word.
Yeah.
And went south really fast.
No, it's like not many people know that the other name for brandy is the French word cognac.
Cognac?
Yeah, cognac is brandy.
Don't say that in the middle of Mpukushu, so they're just going to start laughing.
And then if you go and read cognac, we don't know the rules of recognizing that in French, a G and an N, G, N, if it flows like that, G before the N, it has like a Y on the N, like cognac.
See, the language, now this is where the beauty of languages now comes in, because, that the French are all more often laughed at when they speak speak English is, more often they don't pronounce the H when it's at the beginning. So hot, on the other hand, they will go with the ought. And T, on the other hand, is like take Peugeot, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can easily be tempted to go with Peugeot. But the thing is,
Every Namibian says Peugeot. Every Namibian reads Peugeot.
Peugeot. According to the French English language rules, if the T is at the end of a word, you don't pronounce it. It's pretty much the same rules you find in the English language. The R at the end of water.
Yeah.
Just go like silent. So, coming back to the land of the brave. Can we just play that audio first? Because, that gentleman, Mr. Martin,
Martin Matsweep.
Matsweep, yes. Yeah. Matsweep. Points out a few things that, that they thought, because they basically went on a fact-finding mission with regards to the languages that are spoken in Namibia.
Mm.
Now, they were shocked to find out that, what they knew before they went in the field was completely underestimating just how many dialects are spoken in Namibia. And he pointed out something not know about the Lozi language.
No, but he, let me highlight that one particular point he calls it. He doesn't use the word dialect for the sake of saying, because remember, when you asked the question at the start, what's the difference between a language and a dialect? Now, dialect in some cases is a go-between. Let's, for example, say between two groups that basically have supposedly two different languages. But a dialect is sometimes like a bridging discussion. Now, you find that in China, for example. This thing that I learned at UNAM, at the Confucius Center there, known as Mandarin. Mandarin is spoken by a... Mandarin is the mother tongue of a very small minority in South Africa, in China.
Okay. Isn't that like the one of the official languages?
No, it is their official language. It is their official language.
So you have the other, you know, languages like Cantonese, for example.
Cantonese, which is southern China. Then you've got there's a central language. The one person I know that's currently in China, she says they speak something else because it's one of the furthermost, the northernmost cities of China, mm-hmm. closer to the Russian and the Mongolian border. There they speak something else as well. You've got the guys that are in the east of China, not just the Muslim communities, the Uyghurs, but there's also other desert communities in eastern China. They also speak a different particular sort of like language there. And then you've got that Uyghurs, those Uyghur guys. And the worst thing is with the Uyghurs,
they don't look very Asian.
Yeah,
more Arabic.
No, not Arabic. They look more like the Afghans. They've got rounder eyes. Okay, one of the words that
Mongol
I
Mongol type of features.
Well, Mongol is slightly something else. Mongol Mongol is you are still in, you know, the eyes are still a little bit narrow, but in the Afghan side of things, the eyes are a bit rounder. Plus, they also have a specific kind of facial features and the likes. But the Uyghurs predominantly because they basically highlighted because of their religious customs and religious induced traditions because they're Muslim. They're Muslim Chinese. Mm-hmm. Is that specifically the Uyghurs try to practice Uyghur culture. Now, if you ever go read up why the United States and some other European countries are saying that China is supposedly conducting a genocide in East China, mm-hmm. go look it up and you will try and understand what it's primarily about. What many people don't forget is they go for some of the official narratives coming through from government officials in these other parts of the world. But when you go look at specifically, you know, what's going on with the Uyghurs there in China? I'm not here to promote China, but I obviously view a lot of things. This particular area of China is you're allowed to have your festivals. You're allowed to practice your stuff. It's just...
Religious, cultural?
No, not religious, because obviously the Chinese government want to appoint the religious leader. They don't want that. They don't want these things.
You know, prophets popping up everywhere.
Yeah, they don't want these happy-go-lucky situations that you see in Africa. Or these lucky packet churches that just pop up one day and then voila, homeboy's buying a jet.
Yeah, you know, miracles.
But he's making people eat grass in his church and stuff like that.
Bro is literally dangling from, you know, from the roof.
Or he's running around with insecticides in his pocket because he believes to use doom and your sins. If he sprays it in your face, you will be cleansed of your sins. But Hanagam is just
blind. That's
he's just poisoning you the whole time. So when you look at the aspect of religious control, religious control is another particular thing that also impacts languages, religion in societies. It also impacts, you know, how language is constructed and, you know, the kinds of things that people say. That's most of this joke on the internet. If you hear a guy from the Middle East starting with that, you know, that thing that they supposedly shout, terrorists shout at the start before they press the button for the bomb. So, I won't say it, dear listeners. I can only translate it. It translates to God is good or God is great, the greatest.
Yeah.
And, if you hear that in an argument, especially in an internet argument, it's just someone that pops up a meme. And then you know, oh my goodness, this guy's about to do something, some kamikaze stuff.
You have no idea how many memes are on social media, you know, about that.
Yeah. So, even then, you see how the language impacts behavior even. But like you said, Helmut, we have to listen first to Mr. Martin Matsweep. The important thing is just here. It's a good thing he used the word language rather than the word dialect, because there are obviously groups in Namibia, as in many parts of the world, who have to use certain particular go-between mechanisms. And you know what? Some of the shocking things, Helmut. Ever since this particular UNESCO project began, just for the listeners to know, it's known as the Indigenous Decade, no? IDIL. The International Decade of Indigenous Languages, yes. From 2022 to 2032. And this ultimately is a endeavor by UNESCO to ramp up policy making, legislation making, mechanisms, endeavors to protect indigenous languages across the world, specifically in the developing world. So Namibia is one of those particular countries. So yeah, Helmut, just to provide that explainer, we're going to have a listen to Mr. Martin Matsuip, who's from the Endangered Languages Association of Namibia. He gives a particular motivation in terms of what the policy making engagement was focusing upon. The other lady from UNESCO, we technically couldn't use her voice here because her voice was very soft, even though she was standing with a microphone. So specifically, we'll just fill in terms of, from the literature, what UNESCO has placed available for anyone to read about. And we'll just highlight that for you in that particular, in the engagements after the particular audio bite.
Yeah, in that sense, when we meet our community dialogues, we have established that because nationally we have got approximately 30 or 40 languages in Namibia. I'm readying myself for a fight now. Now, and our assumption when we went up there was that we have these 30 languages, of which the main indigenous African languages are Osidonga Oshikwanyama, Oshiyarara, Kwekwe Koba, Setswana, Afrikaans, once we knew, 6 or 7. So, yeah, and Xilosi, sorry, and Xilosi and Kabamba. And when we went out there, we realized that we have got approximately 50 languages or dialects or vernaculars, whatever you would like to call it in Namibia. And in Ovambo, in the Ovambo culture alone, we have realized that we only thought that there are only two main languages, the Oshindonga and the Oshikwanyama. But our investigation revealed in the community dialogues that Ovambo has got approximately 6 to 8 different dialects. And these Ovambo people do not even understand each other. But that we have got the Osumbaja, we have got the Okwapi, and then we have got the Oborongati. But what is mainstream by the education system is the Oshindonga and the Oshikwanyama languages. We even have done a desktop review, and we have realized in the Zambezi region, Xilosi is not a local language of the Gabonians. It's a language that has been imported from Zambia or Botswana. And they have got their own languages that they speak. The Mafwe speak Mafwe. There's the Basutia, they've got their own language. And they have got these small tribes that have got their own language. Mahe, etc. This is what we picked up. And there are approximately 50. But what is mainstream in the education system is the Xilosi. Because it has got material, it is highly publicized, etc. Now, for us, as a population of 3 million people, it's quite a big ask. for a government to promote 50 indigenous languages. It will be very costly, and the huge exercise. But I would like us to focus on this one, and this is the basis. This forms the basis of our community dialogues. Our community dialogues are based on these six categories of UNESCO or the classification of endangered languages. The first category, and possibly the biggest category, is what we call the languages that are extinct. Now, extinct languages are languages where there are no living speakers. Nobody left. We call it from the atlas. Now, in Namibia, fortunately, we do not have an extinct language. But in Northern Cape, just across the border, we have got a sound language called the Mo language. Oma Katrina Esso is the only, if she did not pass away by now, is the only living speaker of that language. And she had been teaching this language to her grandchildren, to her granddaughter, currently, to document the language, and so that at least there should be a vestige of remainder of such a language there. We have the second group, which we call the critically endangered. Now, the critically endangered languages are the youngest speakers, are grandparents, and older. And they speak the language partially or infrequently. Now, this critically endangered language is, we do not have such a language in Namibia, where we have the language spoken by grandparents and older people, but they speak it only partially or infrequently. But we have a severely endangered indigenous languages. Can I read? The language is spoken by grandparents and older generations, while the parents of a grandparent and older generations, while the parent generation also speak the language. Now, this one is a Gwetta. This is a language that Uncle Lawrence will tell us it's in his area. Now, the Kwe language is severely endangered. And it's only the elderly people that speak the language. The young people are trying to learn the language. This language is not taught in schools. There are no teachers trained in this language. And there are no familiar. The language does not have a dictionary. I don't know, Uncle Lawrence, what you say, but there is possibly a dictionary being developed for the language, for the Kwe language. And then we have the next one, the Haino. The Haimum were assimilated by the Damaras. The Haimum, if you remember, they became the Damaras. The language is only known by the chiefs and the traditional.
We are going to take a quick commercial break before we continue.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge as we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage for the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 03-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always prepare.
Paratus. Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are...
People. Yeah, but in the younger people, the parents in the younger generation do not speak the language. Most of them, they converse in Tamil language. That's it. So those are the two languages that are severely endangered in Namibia. So they are actually at the stage of extinction. If something is not drastically done, teachers are not trained, and this is introduced in the formal curriculum, these languages, actually Haitian is disappearing. Therefore, there are some efforts being made to revive, but we do not know about the Haitian. So, that's it. And then we have got definitely endangered. Definitely endangered. Children no longer learn the language as a mother tongue in the home.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, you are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM this wonderful Friday. Now, on the language, the Lozi part, the Lozi language part coming out of Zambia, that part made my head ring a lot of Berlin conference bells.
But remember, Lozi is literally the best example of a dialect. Because all of the groups in the Zambezi region. I was even schooled here by a caller back in 2022 who called through and said, Dwight, my mother tongue is not Lozi or Silozi. He's got another particular, different mother tongue. But it is a language that is a go-between all the groups that live in the Zambezi region. It's a go-between.
So there's a lot of similarities in those languages. They can understand each other.
That too.
Now, that's something that I also, I find somewhat very fascinating. My dialect, if I can call it, call it that, that's Thimbukushu. You'll have, in the two Kavangos, you have Kwangalis, you have Sambius, you have Birikus, you have Birikus, you have Birikus, and you have Mbukushu. So let's just look at look at these four. I've come into contact with a lot of a lot of Kwangalis and Birikus that don't understand a word coming out of my language. But I can understand a lot of the a lot of the things that that they are saying I can put two and two together.
Now, from their language.
From their language. I can understand 70 to 80% of it. One day when I knocked off here, I went out to catch a cab, and I got in a cab, and I had the two gentlemen, I'm at the back seat, and the two gentlemen sitting in front, the cab driver and the guy sitting in the passenger seat, they are speaking Rukwangari. I can understand that. Now I greet them in Thimbukushu. They tend to look at me like, what's that? One thing I came to learn is that, one of the major differences that, we have TH. They have SH where, they have H, SH where we have TH.
Yeah.
So in other head, in other words, a car, for example, which will be Thihauto, for them, the Thi part will be she.
Are you saying she auto and Thi auto?
Yeah. Now that Thi part, because they don't, most if not all of them, if I'm not mistaken, don't have TH in their language. And also D, D-I. They have L-I instead of D-I. So, Ri, in reference to something that's big, where I would use D-I in reference to something that's big, most of them will use Ri. So, just these minor differences, but I think it's just mostly, it's mostly amongst the youth, because a lot of the elderly can have a conversation between two different dialects and they will still understand each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then, my my generation, not so much. Now, when you look at, another part in the audio that, that the gentleman talked about, more like, if I can use the word dialects within the, within the Oshiwambo umbrella.
Mm.
Yeah. You find that there are a lot of them, and some of them can't even understand. Some of them can't even understand each other. So, looking at it from this angle, I started asking myself one question: how much do I know about my country, or more like, how much do I not know about my country?
And it's particularly one of these discussions, Almut, because the reason why we obviously started off with a discussion of, looking at go-between languages that help to assist overall
communication.
You don't want to sit with the South Africa issue. Now, as in most cases.
What is the South Africa issue?
In most cases, before I explain the South Africa issue, yep. In most cases, many Africans would actually say the South Africa template is the best template. But let me highlight the issue on the ground. So, in South Africa, all the languages are recognized as national languages.
All of them.
All of them. They've got, I think, one less than us, the majority languages. I think we've got 14, they've got 13. Or it's vice versa. We've got 13 and they've got 14. I just forgot who has one more.
I think we're at 13.
Yeah, I'd also think it's us. But they recognize this cluster of languages. The South African context is you can be taught in Zulu, or in Khoza, or in Venda, or in what's the other guys? Or in Sotho. You can go to school. You can be taught in your mother tongue. But then when you get to university, they've got to speak English. Or if you were just purely taught in Zulu at home, you just speak Zulu at home. You now come into the economy and you've got to come and talk to a Dwight who just speaks Afrikaans. Because Dwight also just learned Afrikaans all day long. All his subjects were also in Afrikaans. Now we sit firstly with a language barrier. Because you're going to be stubborn and speak your Zulu.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be stubborn and speak my Afrikaans.
So what you're saying is, if we take, for example, adopted this, that model of language teaching.
Yeah.
We would be sitting here with me speaking Thimbukushu and you speaking Afrikaans.
The whole day.
Man, that would be one heck of a show.
of miscommunication. Of epic miscommunication. But in other manifestations of the South African landscape, societal-wise, for example, in the courts system,
You're
allowed to have a translator. You're allowed to have a translator.
Yeah, but then, Dwight, you're going to need the translator to go through, your entire life, communications, general communications.
In official terminology.
Yeah, in official terminology, yeah.
But you know what it actually does allow, Helmut? It allows also for a vibrant employment cycle in most particular official capacities. So that means, let's, for example, say if there was a census, and there was a census of a specific community, let's say in Namibia. This meant that the census incorporated the presence of language groups in a specific area. So you would know if you're going to dispense service, you would need people who speak, who can communicate and interact with each particular group.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what's one of the funny things I'm going to read on vacancies of state-owned companies in Namibia, state-owned enterprises? They will tell you on that vacancy. It's very interesting. Just do this experiment one time, Helmut. They will tell you the candidate must be multicultural sensitive.
Translation?
Meaning, you've got to anticipate and have a very patient mindset.
You have to understand that not everyone you are going to work with,
will speak English.
Yeah, will speak English.
Yeah.
A lot of them will not do the things, like especially social things, the way that
you do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So even if you're going to come from Windhoek, you have to recognize specifically that in other parts of the country, things probably just move a little bit differently.
A little bit different, yeah.
Yeah. Now, that once again also boils down to the kind of, and in most cases, it's the kind of background, it's the kind of town, it's the kind of society that, you know, that you have to be immersed in. And it is these particular cascading elements. But once again, Helmut, we ask the particular question of, okay, if we know we've got to preserve and protect indigenous languages.
Yeah.
Does it not put it in clear conflict, the pathway of conflict? Remember, it's the question that the hypothesis we did last year, yeah, in terms of the competition, for the one resource in Namibia, which is land, where you start seeing now agriculture needs, attention. Then it was the uranium mining here, the uranium mining exploration activity here in the east of Namibia. Then it's the rare earth minerals and the critical raw materials discussion. Then it's now the oil and gas discussion. All of them are competing for the same resource, land. Throw into that mixture, you've got the mass housing discussion, which is also competing for land. Throw further into that is the discussions of industrialization in Namibia. It also needs land. Because you can't go and build your factory just there on the sea. Yeah, there are such things, but I mean, if you ask the question of economies of scale, it's not going to be worth it. So when you look at this particular discussion, you realize there's once again a conflict element coming up. What is the conflict element? UNESCO wants to champion a particular cause around the world, but each individual country has its own particular needs, wants, and its pathway to development. Yes, they translate under the SDGs in the same thing, right?
Yeah.
But not everyone can be like you and I had already concluded. Not everyone is in Albania. We don't have standing water.
Yeah, no, we don't have surface water.
We don't have surface
water. Underground.
Yeah, we don't have that much surface water. We have a lot of underground water, but we don't have that much. However, the discussions in terms for our industrial endeavor is based upon how do we utilize the mineral resources that we have under the ground. So that means you have to dig into the ground to get to the thing. Remember the UIS, supposed
illegal
quote unquote illegal mining discussion. What was the discussion that also pointed out from there? The small scale miners who were told not to complain, firstly, that they are being blocked from pursuing a cultural practice.
Yeah.
However, they were speaking one side of their story, but when it was visited, when the standing committee went to the ministry's people at Ministry of Mines and Energy, the Ministry of Mines and Energy had indicated they have been running alongside, was it UNDP? Alongside UNDP. They'd been running a training exercise with these small scale miners to coach them how to say, listen, guys, you have to apply for mining licenses. What is good for the one should be good for the other. What is good for the goose is good for the gander. So whether you are small scale or whether you are a joint venture, large corporation mining endeavor, you guys have to go through the same process. Firstly, it's record keeping for the administrators.
And second is for safety reasons.
Safety reasons and how to respond.
And also statistics.
And thirdly, they want to know what you are going to excavate. Ad break after these 5 seconds.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% off its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it.
Easy money.
Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. AutoCash, it's that simple.
So you have a record copy, a record keeping, not copying.
Yeah.
A record keeping for, you know, record keeping and safety and just the flat out statistics of how much small scale activities going on in your, you know, going on in your country.
Yeah.
And also to make sure that you are not exchanging, you know, our natural resources with AK-47s to, you know, M23. You know, all these things are also
potentially, yeah.
Yeah. But before we continue, we have to take a live read.
University, where everyone is an achiever. For online qualifications, the following postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake applications are now open. Velvice University is inviting applications into the below-mentioned postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake. For more information and applications, you can visit our website at www.wuu.edu.na. Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field. This is a one-year blended course. Master of Occupational Health and Safety. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2 years blended course. Postgraduate Diploma in Higher Education, Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field, and this is a one-year blended course. Master of Higher Education, to enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2 years blended course. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA.
Welcome back.
Yeah, so just where I left off,
yeah,
with the small-scale miners.
Yeah.
So the heart of that communication endeavor, that training exercise that was done by a sister UN agency alongside Minister of Mines and Energy from the UIS illegal mining report that the said particular, the associated Standing Committee on Natural Resources went and conducted. Ask yourself, Helmut, how was that particular exercise conducted? And that would obviously entail that this was communicated to the small-scale miners.
Yeah.
Remember, it's not you and I making up this particular fact. It stands in black and white in that report saying these guys were trained in a collaborative engagement by Ministry of Mines and Energy and this UN agency, UNDP, for these miners to understand that every cycle, or there's a cycle or annually, they have to apply for their licenses. And they were even given a heads up to say, hey guys, do it as a group.
Mm-hmm.
Do your applications as one group so that you have multiple applications and that everyone is covered. Mm-hmm. Communicate to each other, inform each other, do this as a group project. Did it stick?
So now you have 50 people showing up, everyone.
No, they didn't even show up.
Really?
That's what stands in that report.
They just like, you know what?
They went like, yes, yes, thank you, yeah, for the thank training. Thank you for the coffee and the tea and the cookies and the sandwiches. That was nice. And never again.
Just had to rub in the tea and the cookies.
No, but because they were trained. Helmut? Yeah. They were trained. Yeah. And if you train someone, you're hoping that this person...
They practice what you are teaching them.
You practice, exactly. The downside is... Literally, if I can't actually call it the law, but let me rather say regulations were then enforced upon them. They were continuously stopped. They made a complaint to the Standing Committee when the Standing Committee first visited them. They said, yeah, our way of life is being impeded, which is also a cultural aspect, which UNESCO also, protects. But, and this is the conflict scenario that I made mention of before the outbreak. Now you see the conflict scenario coming up. Namibia has an industrial policy. Namibia has minerals beneficiation and policy. Minerals beneficiation speaks of every Namibian benefits from what is extracted through mining processes in the mining sector. It was a joint policy authored by the now defunct Ministry of Industrialization and Trade with Ministry of Mines and Energy, because Mines and Energy now has the industrialization part in it.
Yep.
And trade has been thrown with International relations.
Oh yeah, international.
Yeah.
Oh dear Lord.
So, because I went and looked for what happened with the industrialization part. Trade is literally with Minister of International Relations. So,
making it sound like trade is only an international thing.
No, but that's also the reason why you and I concluded in our previous discussions of international relations in Namibia. The reason why countries have relations with each other is because you want to take it to the level of trade.
To the level of trade, yeah. But, well, trade is conducted locally, although that's...
There's obviously the local representation. But this is most now more the international endeavor because in President Nandi Ndaitwah's inauguration speech, she literally said that trade has to take that economic beneficiation, or international relations has to take that economic beneficiation dimension so that we just don't have friendships for the fun of having friends.
Okay, now, let's look at it this way on the African continent level, right?
Yeah.
Are we not looking at what each and every one of our country's strong suits are so that we can tailor our economy or industrial or agricultural goals towards those strengths? Because at this point, it looks like every African continent, all 54 states of them, call it 55, 56, some of them, I'll be disputed. Each and every single one of these countries wants to be an agricultural powerhouse, industrial powerhouse, tech powerhouse. Seriously? Who is going to supply what to who if we all have?
Do you now see?
You see the problem?
Yeah. Which is a conundrum again. Not just a dilemma, it leads to a conundrum. But now I bring you back, and we have to focus back on our course discussion because, the founding document known as the Global Action Plan of the International Decade of Indigenous Languages. The document that I sent you, which is part of our literature for today. Now, they highlighted here specifically the roadmap in the preparation of this global action plan, but it's not actually the roadmap I want to focus on. There's another explainer that's contained in terms of why are indigenous languages crucial to us. So, in this particular discussion of that explainer, they highlighted specifically, and they make it nicely, like bullet points. They highlight that specifically, if you look at why are indigenous languages crucial, people's ability and freedom to use their chosen languages is essential for human dignity, peaceful coexistence, reciprocal action, and for the general well-being and sustainable development of a society at large.
And also, the best way to practice your culture is in your native language.
Exactly.
You can't throw, Timbukushu traditional incarnations in English. People are going to laugh at you.
But then you come to the law, Helmut. The aspect, obviously, what UNESCO is trying to drive here is freedom of expression. Remember that... You are free, that freedom particularly comes from your freedom of thought.
Yeah.
Because the expression is obviously like a byproduct of what you were thinking, what is your conscious being, all those other particular philosophic, dispositions. But the aim here is it's a freedom of thought leading to a freedom of expression.
Mm.
Now, we've installed as a go-between an Anglophone language, which is technically English, it's the only one. We've installed English as our go-between. Our business, our economy, our global interactions are based upon this thing.
Yeah.
How are you now going to walk up to, let's say, the ambassador of China here in Namibia with Timbukushu? And you are championing the Timbukushu theme, Hamoud. You are even showing up in dress to obviously advertise Namibia's multiculturalism.
You just inflated the problem. at this point.
I had to make it that big. That's why Matsweep said, Martin Matsweep said, yeah. Because you know, at the start of that audio, he actually took off his jacket and the guy that commented, you're getting ready for a fight. So technically he took off his jacket to better because he was expressing himself with his arms, you know, and that.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing that you can see happening. Because UNESCO is saying one thing, but then UNDP supports industrialization on the one side.
Mm-hmm.
You as Namibia, you now have to balance in, like I now said, let's say Helmut, you show up as ambassador of Namibia there in China.
Yeah, you really have a very, you know, important economic communications, you know, proposal to make to the Chinese embassy.
Yeah. You show up now, let's say you're now the new minister of trade or the minister of industrialization, but you show up there. And you only speak Thimbukushu.
The first question is, how the heck did I get that job? Because
you also show up in traditional attire because that's now the expression part.
Yeah.
The language is also an expression.
Yeah.
But you also must now reflect everything. You have to go through the whole 9 yards or whole, you know, the whole shebang to, you know, reflect Namibia's multiculturalism. And now this poor diplomat sitting across from you is going like, what is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we are obviously not like the Russian Federation.
Mm-hmm.
The Russian Federation tries to encase that. What many people don't know about Russia is that Russia is, a bunch of republics.
Hence federation. Yeah.
They federalize to become the federal state of Russia. All these smaller territories, which you can technically think of as provinces and regions,
mm-hmm.
have a unique cultural identity, a unique national language in each territory. But their go-between language is Russian.
Mm-hmm.
Russian is a national go-between. But you can choose to have education and things in this particular local language. The reason how I know this is if you remember the Tucker Carlson engagement with Putin.
Yeah.
Now, Putin took him on like an hour's worth of an epilogue.
Yeah.
A prologue of an hour. It wasn't even an introduction. It was a prologue.
Humboldt was just showing up. Humboldt was just showing, you know, showing off at that point because he just dove into.
And it was something like 200 years worth of history.
Yeah.
It was 500 years. It was not like 500 years worth of history that Putin took Tucker Carlson down on.
Uh-huh.
Because, and here's the thing, Helmut. This is also where critical thinking comes in. Some of the leftist political thinkers in Europe and North America were going like, yeah, Putin is now he's taking Tucker Carlson, you know, on a ride. It's almost making it sound like he's making fun of Tucker Carlson. No one understood that Putin was actually, through Tucker Carlson, educating Tucker Carlson's American audience about the cultural difference between them Russians and basically the other European-based countries.
Yeah.
No one understood the scope. No one understood what Putin did. No one, Helmut. Even our bra, Yanis Varoufakis.
Uh-huh.
Even Yanis
missed
this obvious history lesson. This lesson was based upon cultural education, which was a cultural education that Putin engaged in. And everyone misunderstood it. Because currently the template happening in Europe, which is most the problem that's happening in America, which is a discussion that I've also focused on at one stage I haven't had it here specifically on Eagle FM yet, but in many cases in Europe, for example, they expect us to be homogenous societies. But before that, we've got an ad break.
So Vintu Beer asked Namibia to be real. And we got 500,000 responses from Racina and the other 1,400 who are Crocs with socks. 10,000 peeps like T-Boss, whose nicknames are their real names. And 2,100 with the chops to master a braai like Arnold. It doesn't get more real than that. As Vintuk, the real beer for real people, we recognize the 100% real. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
So the whole lumping a group of people together into a monolith, like, you know, you are from Namibia. Do you speak Namibian? Or like a lot of people that go outside of the African continent are more often asked, can you please speak to me some African? Which one?
It's a good thing you highlighted that. And it's a good thing I also mentioned homogeneity. Mm. So homogeneity is a particular problem in an African context. We intentionally installed a homogeneous element known as English at the start of our independence. Mm. But there was already homogeneity present in Namibia pre-independence. Firstly, religion. Mm. Many Namibians today don't know that there were traditional customs that were religions. Yeah, it looks scary for those European missionaries, those religious guys that were sent out here to Africa. It looks scary to them in most cases. But
hey, look, they're the one that crucified their homeboy. We didn't. Which one?
No, that wasn't them.
I mean, what do you mean scary?
That wasn't them. Helmut, those were the Jews in Israel, in the Middle East. Those people weren't European.
Nice to see they have upgraded from cross to bombs. But anyway,
it's because what many Christians forget is many Christians forget that in the eyes of even the modern day Judaic religion, Judaism is the religion of the Jews. Mm. In modern day Judaism, even many Christians forget that in the eyes of every person from who's a Jew or who has Judaism as a religion, Jesus was just another fellow Judaic follower. Yeah, he probably, you know, was more in touch with the religion than them.
Yeah.
But he was just
a regular guy to them.
You
know, more like a avid follower and believer of the religion.
Yeah, he was, and you know, he also stood out a bit because he was beating up people at temples, were using the temples as trading posts. He was treating the sick. He was treating the destitute. He was helping the desperate in society, which is the ethos of the Christian, of Christianity. Help your neighbor.
Yeah.
Now, the homogeneity discussion, Helmut, was also imported, even though there were groups, cultural groups, and all those particular things. What many people just have to think about is go think, who brought Christianity here? What is a Christian? Why does the Catholic Church own the printing rights and the intellectual property of the Bible?
You know who's my favorite guy in those stories?
Who?
King Henry VIII. It's like, can I divorce my wife? No.
And then all of them said no?
No, you can't. It's like, fine, I'll start my own church.
And then he started his own Bible.
Yeah, well, the Church of England. Forget heaven. We are just going with England on this one because that's how proud we are.
Just because he wanted to divorce his wives. And back then, because the Catholic Church is anti-divorce.
I don't even know why he proposed for that. Because even after starting his own church, he kept executing his wives instead of divorcing them.
Yeah, he was probably one of the earliest forms of the modern day, what you call that thing?
Austrian painter?
No, not Austrian painter. Remember, this guy was a womanizer.
Oh, yeah, a big one.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, he just wanted to do what Elon Musk is doing, but as a European.
I am a king, so I can do whatever I want.
Yeah. So, his issue primarily was a discussion of he didn't want to listen to another European noble sitting somewhere else, which is literally the same rhetoric that Donald Trump is saying.
Mm-hmm.
The Europeans must also do stuff
for themselves,
or they must pay us back for things that are giving us pains. He's always deflecting from something, not realizing the moment that you married this woman, you're stuck for life.
Mm.
Why I say that the Catholic Church doesn't support, if you're a Catholic, doesn't support divorce,
it's
because marriage is one of the sacraments in Catholicism. So it starts with baptism. Then it flows into Holy Communion, second step. It flows into confirmation, third step. Fourth step is, in Africa, I can only mention in Afrikaans, Sikkesalwing, which is you are treating or helping the needy, meaning you go to a hospital and you just go and visit the sick, console them a bit, talk to them, you know, listen, and then, you know, give some sort of a, it's just almost like having doctor's bedside manners, but now obviously there's no privacy and all that today. The next step, which is number five, is, because there are seven of them, number five is marriage. Number six is priesthood. If you're not a married man, you can become a priest. And if number seven is death.
Did not see that one coming.
Because you were born here.
I know.
And you need to be baptized.
I also know.
So you go through, and because you receive rites at every level.
More of a, some kind of a spiritual graduation? The ranks?
That too, yeah. But you can skip sika salvan or the healing or treating the ill and the priesthood. If you marry, you can skip both. But you know, the modern Catholics, I don't think they even care about the sacraments anymore. They just go through the motions.
You know, we got this. Yeah. Cross your fingers. And
no, you just go through the motions.
Yeah, no wonder a lot of us are, you know, skipping from, you know, skip all the process, just straight to death. But okay, that's cold. But getting to the nativity of the languages or the indigenous languages. For a lot of us, we like, we more often say that, how to put this, during colonialism, the entire African continent was lumped into one. We're just one group of people. And the said thing is, science was used to justify a lot of things. Like Neil deGrasse Tyson says that, anthropologists were some of the most racist idiots during the, you know, during colonial times, because they're the ones that were walking around with vernier caliper measuring people's heads and nose, and then based those measurements to tell who was, you know, who was fit to sit in a meth class and who was not, and who was not. And as we just learned, it has nothing to do with that. You can have blue eyes and blonde hair and still be terrible at engineering. And you can be, now, what have we noticed? Most of the tech entrepreneurs, most of the tech CEOs are coming out of Asia. Now, you see that, just how powerful politics is when it's, when it's not questioned. It drags everything along. And, you know, a bunch of psychologists also had to, you know, get in line when it comes to acknowledging that, intelligence has anything to do with skin color. But, now bring up the discussion of language. Language is powerful to me in a sense that it carries someone's identity. It carries someone's identity, because if you look at, if you look into the traditional African way of doing things, and this is something that I find interesting, that you know, it's basically across the world. Someone's name, traditional name, has a lot of things that they say, you know, that it says about them.
Yeah.
And that name is, the names, the reasons why we had a lot of all those long names is because you have your father's name, you have your clan name there. It's basically an ID card in words. And then we started, because obviously with the colonialism and and the influence coming out of the Christian religion, we started adopting a lot of names coming out of Christianity, like Joseph, for example. But now now that's the most interesting thing, because if you look up words like Joseph, they have the meanings that are in line with the Christian religion.
Even it's a good thing that you're there, Hamad. Just stop on that point.
Yeah.
Take the naming arrangement that you sometimes find in some of the Awambo groups.
Yeah.
How some people would come and tell you that they've got the grandfather's name.
Yeah.
As, you know, as part of their identity as an individual.
Yours truly here.
But mind you, there's nothing wrong. If you look at it in the essence of this discussion that UNESCO is trying to must now preserve. Remember this, like you said, it's an identity. It's a custom.
Yeah.
The identity even around geographic places. This was one of the reasons why I told you at the start, please don't have me explain Swakopmund. But just for us to even factor this in, of what happens, let's say the current system that Ministry of Home Affairs has to deal with when it comes to birth registration of births. Yeah. Now, Ministry of Home Affairs inherited a particular system that has to feed into global continent and global systems.
Yeah.
You must have a surname. You must have a name.
Yeah.
Helmut, I've tried understanding in Asian cultures, specifically Korean and Chinese naming cultures.
Yeah.
Helmut, the husband's name is Ling. The wife's name is Jiang. The kid's name is Yang. And it's, and remember, their name goes in surname, name.
Yeah.
Surname, first name.
Yeah.
Family names, first name. Now, when I highlighted to that particular thing in terms of, like, even in a Namibian context, we have some groups where the child doesn't have the, yes, it, they might, in some cases, they would have mother, father, one of the mother or the father's surnames. In some cases, it would even be bounced to the grandparents of the child.
Yeah.
So the family name would come from the grandparents itself. That particular naming custom is completely lost if you come to the particular naming system
we have adopted.
That we've adopted.
Yeah.
Which is a naming system that you can see, obviously, that comes through from South Africa. South Africa, obviously, it comes through from England. England, it comes through from the European context. What does it mean? They know, okay, if it's mother, father, it must either have the father's name. If we don't know who the father is, the child gets the mother's name, the mother's family name.
Yeah.
But how do you explain, like I just highlighted to you, Helmut, in Korea and in China, it's a Ling, it's a Chang, and it's a Yang. How do you define that particular discussion?
It must be something that is linked to what to their naming systems practiced in their culture.
Exactly. Their naming system is something that was transmitted in their country. Because if you've got from a European context, Mr. Jones with his wife, Mrs. Jones, their children, the Jones kids, everyone understands in that custom of Europe, that is their naming custom. But if you come, for example, to, into Africa where you've got a myriad of different illustrations of how customs are practiced, but then obviously after the Berlin conference, someone imported something known as Christianity because the Arabs on the other side of Africa, on the east side of Africa and north, imported Islam into Africa. They bring in their own particular naming customs. Now, this is where a critical point emanates. Helmut, before independence, many Namibians were registered with the Catholic Church, with the Lutheran Church. The next best thing next to an ID was your baptism document. For us Catholics, it was known as your baptism document. It was literally like a little open-close card thing that had your name, parents' names, and because it was the next best thing in terms of having a national identity document. Obviously, if you understand Namibia's particular historical background, there was an issue under colonialism where the Germans didn't register the indigenous people. Your name was not registered, Helmut. You would not be registered. The South Africans come in, the South Africans perpetuate the same thing. The South Africans know, you know, that there is a village there, but we don't count them. We count them, but we don't count them.
They are not part of, you know, you know, they don't reflect on our national statistics.
They reflect because you are counted in a census, but you are not actually counted in the aspect to say we will dispense service delivery to you. The next particular thing that obviously comes from that is now what you and I know, of what happened, obviously, from 1950 into the 60s was the Oordendaal Plan, the Group Areas Act, and all those particular things. The South Africans, in my understanding, they wanted to do literally what the Americans did with the First Nations. You can't call them anymore Native Americans. You have to use the word First Nations people to differentiate between the Europeans coming there from England and France and North America and Europe. And these guys being there, hence they call themselves, they had nations before these settlers came along from Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, in that particular thing, Helmut, I know it's a bit of a long stretch in terms of identifying and explaining the homogeneity issue that is still present, but it is one of the particular major stumbling blocks. Homogeneity is reflected in English, or the adoption of English, like in Namibia, or French in other countries. Christianity is the second level of homogeneity, because if you now have to speak about religions and stuff like that, which are customs, a religion is a custom. So whose custom are we sitting with? If I'm a Catholic, let's say you are Seventh-day Adventist.
Yeah.
You know, whose custom are you sitting with? Someone else's exported custom to you. And the funny thing is, Hamid, out of all of this, this feeds back into our creative industry discussions that you and I have had. The exportation of creative intellectual property around the world from Europe, North America, Korea, Japan, who else was there? Even South Africa has exported it. So yeah.
Now, let me walk you through something that fascinates me about, about naming systems.
Yeah.
The mark that you see at the beginning of words like, at the beginning of names like, McHenry, McDonald.
Mm.
Has that naming system is Scottish in origin, and maybe some parts of Europe, but it's I trace it back to Scotland, and that MacBat literally translates to son. So McHenry literally translates to Henry's son.
Mm.
That's so in one.
So it's literally like the Scandinavian one of Sen and Son. Oh, okay. So if you've got Anderson, you read it as Anderson, son of Ander. If you've got a daughter, because the Icelandic still have this, if it's the daughter of Ander, it's Ander's daughter.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus. Now that's the Scottish one. And now in my morning show, I make fun of a lot of people with a Mac at the beginning of their, beginning of their names.
Mm.
Now, so McDonald literally means the son of Donald. Now, and then when every time I talk about this, I like to use two names of two world leaders.
Yeah,
that's the Russian president and the MBS, the Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia. Now, Mohammed bin Salman's name is one that is, one that you'll see that I think, the whole thing of, son, basically, the naming system of basically a name being someone's entire identity, which has a name that's given to them, their surname, their family name, or possibly where they are from.
Yeah.
Every time that we talk about, Jesus, sometimes in the Bible is referred to as what? Jesus of Nazareth. The Nazareth part shows that that's where he is from.
Yeah.
And now, Muhammad bin Salman's full name is Muhammad bin Salman Al Saud. Muhammad is a very common surname. Muhammad is a very common surname in the Arab world. And, Bin means son. Salman, that's his father's name. Al Saud, that's his family name.
Mm.
All in one sentence. And then you get to, Namibia, for example. Now, one of the famous streets that you find in Windhoek is Mandumendum Fire Street.
Yeah.
What's a well-known Mandumendum Fire's full name? Mandume Yandem Fire, that literally translates Mandume of Ndem Fire, again pointing to his father.
Mm.
And, when you cross over to Asia, then the Russian president's full name is Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin.
Mm.
The Vich part, that means son. Now, if now for women, it's for women, it's not Vich, Vna means daughter, so Petrovna, Petrovich.
Actually, his daughters would be Putina.
Yeah.
He does have daughters, guys.
He has, and you know, he, you know, there's you know,
apparently the one doesn't want to talk to him.
One of homeboy's daughters does gymnastics, right? And he, you know, has a trainer. There's one American comedian. I was like, can you imagine how brave this guy is?
If you're being paid, you
his job is to toss Putin's daughter in the air and cross his fingers and hope he catches her before she breaks. But anyway, if you see when you look at all this type of naming system that basically shows you know how important someone's name is to their identity, and this is not just their individual identity, but also the you know their clan identity, their family identity, their tribal identity, then you begin to understand just how much what we call Christian names have broken.
Yeah,
they our cultural identities, because you went to bed with take for example Joseph, for example, what cultural apologies to all the Josephs out there, what cultural identity where in your culture do you find the meaning of that name? Because that's a Hebrew word which means God will increase. Huh?
I've only known one Joseph in my entire life.
And you see, now you understand why we are, you know, our phones are being, you know, stolen by Abrahams. Because now you...
no, Helmut.
It's Friday, man. I had to throw it in there.
No, but you know that the name Abraham is actually in Hebrew.
Uh-huh.
It's literally written with a V. It's Avram. It's only when the name traveled went into the English language, it started becoming Abraham, because supposedly the people were hearing Abraham. So that extra H and that extra A was added into the name. So it's actually Abram or Avram. It's pretty quick. And then someone just went and decided to add an extra H and an A. Abraham, Avraham.
Yeah, so, look, I think for a very long time before we came up with ID cards, we decided to, we had a very, more like a universal naming system.
Yeah.
Where people were given names.
Oh, Ibrahim is also part of that cluster.
Oh, yeah, Ibrahim. Oh.
Ibrahim, Abraham, and Avram.
Ephraim?
Maybe Ephraim, maybe.
One thing that you see is that, our ancestors all across the planet understood one thing. Give someone a name that has cultural or traditional background.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of guys showed up, was like, you know what? We are going to dip you in this water. When you get out of it, you have a different name now.
From now on, your name is Beatrice.
Now henceforth,
are Johannes.
You know, there's a very common, there's a very common character that's used in Nigerian meme creation. I'm not sure if it's still being used, but, 2015, 2016, it was used a lot.
Mm.
The Akpos character. Where, I
don't know Nigerian memes are
more. This is my field of
expertise.
My field of expertise. You see, Akpos, turns out because of this whole baptism thing, he was taken to church, and he was dipped in water when he came out of. He was told that your name is no longer Akpos, your name is now Paul.
Mm.
And someone wrote in the comment section that why not just call him Apostle Paul? But.
It's such a lame joke, Albert. It's such a lame.
So homeboy, when he got home, he decided to take his, his bottle of whiskey, put it in water, took it out, and was like, from now on, he shall be known as Coke. Goodbye. Now, the question is, what changed?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, cultural heritage, which is, basically, more like a cultural heritage or which is a very broad term that, most parts of, or some parts of which we talked about yesterday.
Mm.
And today is more of more into the preservation of languages. So preservation is at the center of all the you know the heritage thing.
Mm.
Yeah. So if we are going to keep our languages alive, it's going to be one, a very tricky one in the, especially in the world of commerce, because look at international relations, for example, like you, like you just, like you pointed out using an example of me, you know, trying to give a Chinese, you know, some, to establish diplomatic relations with the Chinese in my, you know, in my mother tongue.
Mm.
Here's the thing. Take, for example, if every, you know, every, you know, every native speaker in the country was given the privilege to basically just study their language only, minus English, we're going to have some serious problem with our international relations, because when the Americans are flying in, they know that they, you know, they speak English. They don't need a translator.
Yeah.
But if someone is flying in from, take for example, China, they know that they have to come with someone that speaks English as a translator, that speaks both, take for example, yeah, Mandarin and English. That's an easy one.
Mm.
Now, if we had, take for example, 13 different official languages, now you will have to take a translator. Man, it will be very difficult to translate, because every country will have to learn both, understand both, you know, have a translator for all the 13 languages.
Yeah.
For them to be able to communicate with us.
Which is bad.
Which countries, you know, will put in that type of resources to teach someone? Man, that would be very good.
It's bad, Hamburg. But before we end, we've got a quick live read. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. Online qualifications for the postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake applications are now open. Velvice University is inviting applications into the below-mentioned online postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake. For more information and applications, you can visit our website at www.wu.edu.na. Postgraduate Diploma in Project Management Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field, for this is a one-year blended course. Master of Project Management. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field, this is a 2 years blended course. Postgraduate Diploma in Monitoring and Evaluation Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field. This is a one-year blended course. Master of Monitoring and Evaluation. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field. This is a 2 years blended course. Postgraduate Diploma in Business Administration Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field. And this is a one-year blended course. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA.
Welcome back. So if you ask me, I think Namibia, we have, I think we have a very good approach to it, in a sense that we have implemented the native languages to be taught in, to be taught in different schools. But at the end of the day,
mm.
whether you are in the northern part of the country, south, east, or wherever you find yourself,
mm.
English is going to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can learn your mother tongue, but English will be on the side. Because when you leave that northern bubble that I was born and raised into, at the end of the day, I'm going to meet, you know, Dwight from Rehoboth, where I can't pronounce a word out of my language.
Yep.
And for some,
and
you
I really
know,
can't pronounce the word out of his language.
Yeah. And well, there's another person called John Walenga who'll put us on the, in the studio and expect us to do a show. Now imagine the
together Nohal.
Together with my with my Afrikaans, it's gonna be a comedy show. And believe
me, you should be banned from speaking Afrikaans.
I've been told.
Quick break.
Tune in to the F&B segment every Monday morning from 7:45 a.m. live on Eagle FM for early morning dose of financial education and account protection. The F&B segment is proudly brought to you by F&B Namibia.
Welcome back. It's 6 o'clock on the dot. And,
and that's why you shouldn't make jokes, Helmut.
Oh, I know. Believe me. I've been told, my cousin likes to make fun of me that I, you know, I speak Afrikaans the same way that one local artist speak English. I don't want to mention any names. Because I don't have a bodyguard, not to mention a lawyer. So,
that's dangerous ground there.
Very dangerous. So where was I? Namibia has, I think we have, you know, we have a very good approach to it. It's just, I mean, it's just about, so at this point, I think to some degree, it's safe to say that it's every native speaker's responsibility to preserve their native language.
It is. But here's the thing, Helmut. Like Matsweep explained it right there before we end, you know, the show. Like Matsweep explained it there. There's a scenario like the lady that he mentioned in South Africa, the ESL lady. She's the last speaker of her, and she was trying to train her grandchildren.
And that's it.
So the downside is, and he even used another example that obviously I didn't cut into the audio, which also came later on. There's now, obviously you've got us now, intergroup marriages. So let's say now you go marry now someone who is.
I'm already married to one Lozi and one Donga.
Okay, in that scenario.
Yeah.
So what's the go-between you guys will use?
English.
For the kid, for the children.
Oh, English.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I won't mention, dear listeners, whether those marriages are legal. I'm just saying. He said it.
Oh, no, they have introduced themselves on my live stream. I know.
So, in that scenario.
Yeah.
The go-between becomes English.
Yeah.
Now, what this obviously leads to is that now the child is being taken, like you highlighted also, taken to the village now to go show to the grandparents now.
Now they
have here's your grandkid.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa, and then the grandparents are throwing here all kinds of local lingo. And the kid is, and everything is just deflecting from the kid's forehead. And the kid is like, what are they saying, Dad?
There's one gentleman who, you know, there's one gentleman from the same village, I think, married, I don't know what tribe that guy married, but the kid only spoke Afrikaans. Now imagine the grandmaster trying to catch up with Afrikaans. And that's where I actually, I think I perfected my broken Afrikaans from there because, well, boy, oh boy, that Afrikaans. I knew there was something wrong with the Afrikaans because I could understand it. And I've never been to an Afrikaans school. And there ain't no way that's Afrikaans. That's just you know, that's a cocktail of English and Mbugufu, and now we just decided to give it a new name. Now the things now according to the UN, just to wrap up, conservatives estimates suggest that more than half of the world's languages will become extinct by 2100. I'll be dead, so I'm good.
Yeah, same here too. I'll also be dead by then.
And, I don't want to be alive and, you know, unless I can walk and chill, I don't want to be alive. Now, other calculations predict that up to 95% of the world's languages may become extinct or seriously endangered by the end of this century. But, again, this is not something that is just, this is not something that's new. The extinction of languages and the cultural identities is something that has been happening all throughout history. There are a lot of dead languages, Latin being one of them. It's not spoken as an official language anyway. It's just used in, you know, summoning demons now. And,
no, Helmut, the priests, the Catholic priests have to know Latin.
Oh, yeah. They have
because every Easter they perform part of the ceremony in Latin. Okay, the diocese I grew up with the most in Rehoboth, the priest there had to use Latin for the Eastern ceremonies. When I came to Windhoek, these guys were doing it in English.
No kidding. Cultural identity there being lost. So 5 minutes past the hour of six, it's a Friday, so be safe out there. Drive responsibly. I don't believe in drink responsibly. But that's just me. Because my point of view is, the first shot is going to be responsible. The second and the third one, I hardly doubt. So just well, be safe. I would stay away from people's cars, people's cell phones.
You should have just stopped at this responsibly. Just be responsible.
Stay away from those two, you know, because shotguns are now affordable, depending on how angry you are as a husband. We really have to go.
Hey, man, I don't see them. But anyway, yeah, on that note, dear listeners, enjoy your weekend. You'll still see me on Sunday morning, obviously, but on Monday, Helmut and I will be back.
Yeah.
And obviously, we'll be getting into some more insightful discussions for you.
Yeah, until then, have a good weekend.
Ouli mnangeshefa no hara kushivifa oma akuro yekupitira muhoriki radio station ayo Eagle FM enyamukuru olongaha ningekwata fano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konorahita twimwe heali imwe ne heali imwe imwe no hamano that is 0817147116 mamberewa konorahita tunatu bali oheta tubatatu ne nola no natu ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na opo mone oshijemo shiri nawa
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station. Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world,